Covered here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the hosts and guests consider important.
It's a real estate revolution
with the latest
revenue.
You get fun and the facts, you will keep coming back.
It's time to live the life you choose.
And now it's time for a power hour from America's trusted resource for everything real estate. Everything in the real estate industry is in a constant movement of change. It's a real estate revolution with your host, Victoria Riva De Nera, the Riva regulars, special guests, and your call-in comments. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution.
Revolution, revolution, revolution.
Well, I guess when they stop singing, I start talking. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution. I am J. Philip Ferranda, your host tonight. We are live on New York's AM 1700 WRCR every Wednesday from 6 to 7. We live stream on Facebook.com/Victoria Riva and Periscope TV/the RE Revolution and YouTube on the RE Revolution channel, and of course on WRCR.com. You can call in and join the discussion at area code 845-362-0013. And I'm very, very pleased to be joined this evening by a special guest, Councilman John C. Noto. He is a councilman for the town of Clarkstown right here in Rockland County. Welcome, John.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so I'm going to go over a couple things that would be of interest to those who are listening about you. You are very much a homegrown guy. You went to Clarkstown South High School. You attended Thomas Aquinas College. You live here with your wife and two daughters. Your real estate background is pretty extensive as well. You've been an appraiser. You were a partner in a real estate company. You were the Rockland County Director of Real Property Tax, and currently you run a business, Paradigm Tax Group, which specializes in the fair taxation of real property. So that is quite a resume.
Oh, thanks. I haven't gotten very far from Rockland County, which I'm actually happy to say.
I don't know why anybody would want to go over that far afield. It's a great place to live. It's getting a little bit expensive, perhaps, but it's a great place to live. And that actually leads me to a couple of questions. Those of us in the real estate industry, when we have someone move to the New York area from out of town, they love the close proximity to New York City. They love the beauty of the Hudson Valley. They love our schools. They love the food.
Always.
But what blows them away and the culture shock they get is the sticker shock of the high property taxes. And maybe you could talk a bit to what it is that contributes to our high taxes here. And I will say that I think I have a couple pet theories. One being that if you look across the state border over into Connecticut, you have town government and state government, but no village government, no county government, and I think there's a lot more layers of municipal governments, but there could be other things as well. So how would you say taxes can get so high around here?
Well, what you said is fairly accurate. You have a lot of layers of government. You know, there's a lot of government services, and that contributes to most of it. And, you know, when you look at, there's several different lines on your tax bill. So you'll mm-hmm. see a county line, a town line, special districts, and so forth. So we have, you know, an all-volunteer fire department throughout Rockland that saves us a lot of money. And we're fortunate in that respect. But we do pay for several other services. And one of the biggest burdens on that one line, the county line, is unfunded mandates that come from the state. And, you know, there's a gentleman who has my position as a county director in Erie County, and he told me that his unfunded mandates for his county was $200 million, and without them, they wouldn't have had a property tax for the county line. So it's a lot of legislation that feels good, sounds good, is helpful to many. but we're paying for it locally and through our taxes. And you know, it doesn't come from our income tax. It doesn't come from, you know, the road tax and all the other revenue sources that government gets. It comes straight from property tax. And to just go a little further, the way property tax comes about is a municipality, a government, figures out how much their budget is for what they need for the year. They figure out how much all sources of revenues are going to contribute to that budget to make that budget whole. And whatever's left over goes to property tax. That's what becomes property tax. So if you had a $100 million budget, $75 million was you expect to get through mortgage taxes, sales taxes, things like that. What's left over goes to property tax because it's your most consistent source of revenue.
Right. And then you say you have 10,000 properties and it gets divided by 10,000, but not perfectly divided because it depends on the value of the property. So a big office building is going to pay a lot higher taxes than a small ranch. Okay, so the term unfunded mandate is one that I've been hearing for quite some time. And if you could break that down as to what it means to the regular guy driving in his car right now, he hears unfunded mandate. Can you give me an example, for example, what an unfunded mandate might be and how it would affect a regular taxpayer?
Okay, so our Albany legislators come up with a program that's going to assist local residents. And what they do is they know it's going to be a cost, but they feel it's going to benefit a large portion of the population. Then they'll enact a law that they're not, that the state budget's not going to pay for. They push that cost down to the county or lower.
Okay, so they come up with a program. They think this is a great idea. It's a feel-good thing. It'll help people, so on and so forth. But like anything else, it's got to get paid for.
That's right. So, you know, the way it's designed is to – it's a bit political. I mean, they know that the state budget doesn't have the money, but they know the county can raise it through property tax, which is – kind of a double-edged sword. It really was, property tax was always meant to be a local tax.
Yes.
But they found a way to take some of that money that they wanted to pay for a program with and say, well, the county will pay for it, so it'll be a county program, but mandated by the state to deliver. And the county's got to pay for it, so it goes part of their budget, and that portion that can't be, you know, made whole through all those other sources of revenue gets made whole by the property taxpayer.
Gotcha. Okay, do we have a caller? Sounds like we have a caller. Okay, hi, caller. Welcome. Okay, I guess we don't have a caller. Are we on now? Okay, and hello. Welcome to the show. Okay, we'll just let that one wait for a little while. Okay, so unfunded mandates are one thing. If I am a property owner. Gotcha. Okay. Hello, caller.
Hello, caller. Oh, that's me. I'm the caller.
You are the caller. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is Coach Fino calling in.
The chocolate guy.
Chocolate guy, yes.
We are.
So you got...
We are talking, Rich, welcome to the show. We are talking with John Noto, who is a town councilman here in Clarkstown. We've been talking, among other things, about the high taxes here in Rockland County, all throughout New York, the role that unfunded mandates take in that. And we were actually going to ask about some other things, but we heard you were here, and we'd love to hear what your thoughts on the subject.
Well, first off, please, I plan on hanging on the call as long as you'll have me because I'm really enjoying your discussion. And I wanted to start off right off the bat. I'm in Pennsylvania, but your conversation is opening my eyes. So does a county have the ability to say, whoa, state, we don't want to adopt that mandate?
Oh, I think we know the answer to that.
Yeah,
what would you say?
It's mandated services by law, so the counties are stuck with it. And several of the counties, most of the counties, try to fight back and lobby through the different associations of counties and the association of towns. But once it's law, it's very difficult to look at a state legislator and say, you know, we got to pull that mandate back. And that state legislator is looking at several thousand votes and says, you know, I really can't do that now. I just voted for it. And, you know, so the county really gets stuck with it, and the taxpayer ends up paying for it. And, you know, like I said, some of the mandates are very well worth it, and some of them have run their useful course and probably should go out of the books, but stay on the books, and that cost remains with the taxpayer.
Okay, and we can certainly come back to the tax thing. There was a couple of conversations we had prior to the show, and leapfrogging from the local issue of taxes to the real estate market as a whole. This is something you watch. This is something you work in every day. You appeal property taxes. This is something you do. One of the things, remarks you made to me, which I thought was very profound, is that interest rates right now are fictitiously low. And I love the terminology. Tell me what you mean by, tell the listeners what you mean by fictitiously low.
So the interest rates being as low as they are, historically they've never been this low. And what it does, the government's trying to entice activity in the mortgage industry. So they keep the rates low, they free up some of the mortgage money that's available for buyers to try to keep the activity going, try to keep the economic engine running. And what happens is, with it being as low as it is, you know, as an appraiser that came up through the 80s and, you know, so forth, we used to say interest rates are favorable at 8%.
I remember those days.
So that person that's buying a home who's qualifying for a mortgage at 8% can only borrow X amount.
Mm-hmm.
But at 3%, they can borrow significantly more.
Right.
So the curse of that rate being so low now is that people have been able to spend so much more in a house with the same income that it's been able to inflate the price of the homes. Not so much market-driven, like true market-driven, but because of these interest rates being so low, held down so low. So when we get inflation pressure and those mortgage rates start to go up, you're going to see a lot of pressure on the upper end of value, or the ability for the consumer to purchase money to buy a house. So it's going to really pressure the market to, you know, with the values going down.
Okay, so you and I discovered before the show that we are the exact same class in high school, different high schools, but we're both class of 85. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
So we lived through 20% interest rates.
Right.
We remember when our parents would sit at the dinner table, and I remember my father saying to my mother, it doesn't matter what the interest rate is, it just matters whether you can afford the monthly payment. And that really is part and parcel to this conversation. If the rates are 2.5%, that means you can go from, instead of 8%, that means you can go from affording a $250,000 house to a $500,000 house. And that, unfortunately, if the rates are manipulated by the financial powers that be at the Fed, at the federal level, in the great financial institutions, then that will make $250,000 houses $500,000 houses. And that is why I think some people blamed governmental policies for the Great Recession, which is a very valid thing. If, and this is just two guys talking, what do you think rates would be now if they were not being manipulated by the Fed? What if we just let the market determine the rates? Where do you think they'd be?
There's so much that goes into that economic, looking at it economically. But I would say in a strong economy with interest rates that are more traditional, I think if you were in the sixes, you would be considered favorable. You'd have a real estate market that would be churning along. It used to be the typical, every 7 years somebody would move.
Yeah.
That's been traditional.
Yeah.
People have been doing that now. You know, they're holding longer, they're staying where they are longer. So, you know, the normal market, you get a flow and you get a steadier increase in values that go along the lines with income and with other factors of inflation and so forth.
I think fewer people are moving. I think that's contributing to the local shortage of inventory that we have here, which interestingly enough, when you have low inventory, prices go up.
Right.
Because the only way to get somebody to move is to throw more money at them. Rich, in Pennsylvania, are you seeing people move less?
Yeah. Yeah, we're following a very similar trend as to what you just described there.
Okay, so what's happening locally is actually simply a reflection of what's happening nationally, in that you have artificially low interest rates. Why move? The nest is empty. You don't want to mow the lawn anymore. It's time to downsize, but hold on a second. Why move? We're paying 2.75%. Who wants to move out of that? So I think we may be sowing the seeds of another crash down the road, which is something we have to be very careful about. We look like we're going to be needing to pay the bills shortly. So we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from those that sponsor us.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138. Or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
It's time for the revolution. The real estate solution. We saw you left confusion. Come join the revolution.
We are back. We are welcome back to the Real Estate Revolution. I'm J. Philip Ferranda, your pinch-hitting host tonight while Victoria is out on 1700 AM WRCR, talking with Councilman John C. Noto, town councilman of the town of Clarkstown. You just entered office, I believe, this past year, yes?
That's correct.
You ran in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You had been involved in government before. You were
correct.
Telling me about that. You were
right.
In private industry, and then you were in government as well.
Right.
So tell me about your public service background prior to serving as town councilman.
Sure. I was in a position that's mandated. You know, one of our fund mandates, but it was the director of real property tax services.
Well, it was a funded mandate, though, right?
That was yes, that was.
Yeah. Okay, good.
So, but locally, by the way, so our job was to maintain fairness and equity, if you will, within the property tax system. So we were an independent arm of government. We worked between the taxpayer and the assessor, and we trained the assessor and helped them through difficult issues they may be having. And train the boards of assessment review so they could carry out their function as the trier of fact in terms of value for their assessments. And it was an interesting job. You know, the downside of that job was we were also, when somebody couldn't pay their tax, our job was to go through the foreclosure process with the folks.
Yeah.
And sell the home ultimately.
Yeah.
With the Department of Finance.
Right. Yeah, familiar with that. I think also governments, when they do have to repossess property, you know, unfortunately, it goes to bid to hire brokers to do the mm-hmm. valuation and the recommendations for what best to do with the property. So that's not easy work, that's for sure. Prior to that, you had an appraisal and brokerage background. You actually owned a brokerage company.
That's correct. It was a family business.
Uh-huh.
My mom and dad started in the mid-50s, and when my dad passed away in 85. My mom took it over, and she was a brilliant woman, and she was one of the most well-respected appraisers in our area, and trained me and several others, and we turned out okay. And then she passed in 2000, and as you know, if your heart's not into that type of business, if it's not your third child, you don't stay in it.
You can't do it.
So we sold it, and I moved on to a wireless infrastructure development company. I started it with two gentlemen, and then rolled into government.
So we have a couple more things in common. We're capitalists, and we're raised by brilliant women.
Exactly right.
So lucky us. Okay, so getting back to the real estate conditions right now, we had talked prior to the show about the homestead and non-homestead sectors of real estate, of the tax base.
Right.
Again, to the regular folks driving around out there, what is the difference between homestead and non-homestead?
So every municipality has the opportunity when they do a reval for their community to adopt what's called the Homestead Act. It's a section of real property tax law that allows that jurisdiction to have two rates, one for 1, 2, and 3 family homes,
mm-hmm.
and another rate for every other type of parcel from vacant land through condominiums. Okay?
And commercial property? Commercial,
industrial.
Okay.
Everything. Everything else, if it's not 1, 2, or 3 families, it falls into the non-homestead.
Gotcha.
So what it allows a municipality to do is to shift the burden, instead of having it equally distributed according to value across all parcels and properties of all types, it allows you to shift that burden onto one class or another. Okay? Some do it equally. Most don't. Most look at the non-homestead as non-voting. So they shift more of the burden onto the commercial base or the non-homestead base. And that can only work for so long. And what we've seen locally is that non-homestead rate getting double-digit increases, where the Homestead Act is staying under the 2% cap. And the 2% cap is really actually almost, it's like 0.9 now, depending on your uh-huh. municipality. So it's an overburden on your commercial base. And what happens then is you start affecting the value of that commercial base, and you start affecting the tenancy of the commercial base. And ultimately what will happen, and it happened in Erie County, where they lost their commercial base and they went into a very dark economic period real estate wise because they didn't have the parcels generating the revenue that they should have because they overburdened them with taxes.
Erie County is up
Buffalo.
Buffalo.
That's okay, correct.
So yeah. I have agents up in Buffalo that work for my firm,
mm-hmm.
and we can speak to that.
Sure.
So this is to get back to sort of the unfunded mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Very recently, in the past few years, New York State passed a cap on how high property taxes could go up each year. That's the genesis of this, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So feel good law.
Yep.
Everybody wants lower taxes. Mm-hmm. Everybody's screaming the property taxes are too high. We opened the show with that. Albany says, hey, we'll just cap the taxes. Oh, by the way, you still have to fund your schools. You still have to pave the roads. You still have to make sure that the lights are on at night along the streets. So the governments say, well, wait a minute. We're not getting as much money from the homestead side of things, so we'll just tax the commercial, the condominiums, the industrial higher.
Right.
But what that does to the property owners is that forces them to raise the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And now the guy who's happy that his property taxes aren't going up is seeing his rent go up on his business higher than it would have anyway, and he's still paying the tax.
Exactly right. Yep.
That's the law of unintended consequences.
Exactly. And there's, you know, we've discussed this, you know, throughout the state with several different, you know, people that were directors of real property or assessors or, you know, municipal officials. And, you know, at best, this was a short-sighted law. Like you said, it felt good. It looked good. It put a cap and, you know, squeezed government to really control their costs. That was the good side. The downside is the cap stayed at 2% or went down effectively with inflation and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So now it's at like 0.9. It's almost zero. But all your fixed costs are going up. All your salaries continue to rise.
Absolutely.
All your costs go up. You know, fuel has come down, which actually helped a lot of municipalities. But they'll go back up. And there's been no adjustment from the state on that. So, you know, it felt good. But a lot of people said it, you know, it might have been by design to, like, the layers of government to maybe consolidate some of those governments
Well, that would be a real cost cutting.
Yeah, and some have said maybe that was, you know, part of the philosophy in doing that, because there were studies going around, not only with this governor but the prior governor, where they were funding consolidation initiatives. So they would look at where, you know, governments could consolidate, okay, whether it be through assessor's offices or police departments and so forth.
Well, that's a big thing. I'm from Ossining. Ossining has two villages in an unincorporated section known as the town. The town outside had its own police department. Both villages, Briarcliff and Ossining, had their own police department. They effectively sunsetted the town of Ossining Police Department, and now the village police department, and I'm really oversimplifying, but now the village police department takes care of both the village and the town. So now there's one less police chief, one less, you know, precinct, if you will, or so forth, police station. So that reduces the cost, but there's a lot further to go, in my opinion. And I will also have to give the councilman credit for the phrase law of unintended consequences. He said it before the show. I just parroted it. I have said it before, but I love the turn of the phrase. Rich, would you say that the law of unintended consequences occurs elsewhere in our great land?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, you said it perfectly, you know, back in 19, you know, you're so much older than I am, by the way, 1985, when you had to sit around and your father said, hey, it really matters. It doesn't matter the interest rate. It matters whether we can afford it on a monthly payment. I mean, I think that's across the nation. And us, we don't say monthly payment. We talk about how much Hershey chocolate we can buy.
All real estate's local.
It's the same concept. And the other thing I want to bring up to you, and I think there's wisdom to this, because PA is not, we follow New York's lead on so many things. But I did have the privilege of living in Atlanta, Georgia for a period of time. And that's a very county-based system. There's not as many layers as you talked about. And there's pluses and minuses to both. The plus side was it was a cheaper cost of living, period. The minuses were, you know, they had no car inspections, so people were driving around
in jalopies,
to put their foot out the door, to try to stop the car. So there's pluses and minuses to both. My question for you guys to think of is, where does it head for us ultimately for the average homeowner?
Well, this is the question of the ages, because we have an unsustainable tax situation. A regular guy making a middle class income in a two income household who wants to sell his house, oftentimes their taxes are $15,000-$20,000, when 8, 10, 12 years ago the taxes were 6 or 8. So taxes are it's nuts. So it becomes their communities, for example, where you've got kind of almost a mercenary feel, where people move in because of the school district, and as soon as the kids are out of the schools, they move out. And it's not like there's multi-generations of a family living in a town anymore. You've just got people kind of like living there with the school district as a hired gun. So it affects communities. That's just one of many situations that we're dealing with.
There's always that, you know, that strong demand for services, and you have to balance that with what the people can afford. And, you know, here in Rockland, we have tremendous services. We have, you know, Clarkstown is always in the top 10 safest towns in the country, and, you know, we pay for that. And there's a balance, though. There's, you know, we have to figure out, you know, how much more can we afford. And sometimes when we do a project, we really need to take a deep dive into, is it needed? Or is it a want? Because we're at that point where the number one issue on everybody's mind when it comes to real estate is taxes. And they want to know, are they going to continue to keep skyrocketing the way they have been? And, you know, those special projects that you might have wanted to do, you may have to put off for a year, 2 years, or 5 years. And that's just the reality of our times. We have to get our budgets back in order.
That's the thing. And, you know, it's funny. Interest rates could go up 1%, and it won't affect affordability nearly as much as the taxes on a home going up $1,000. That is for sure. So we talked briefly also about the fact that there is low inventory. Mm-hmm. I believe that one of the reasons that we have low inventory is because we're still not out of the decline. We're still not out of the crash. So if you bought your house for $500,000 in 2005, at the low point of the recession, you might have been worth $350,000. I think you're only back to value in the next, I don't know, year or two. So do these people have enough equity to sell? In many cases, the answer is no, and that's why they can't sell. What other factors contribute to the low inventory, in your opinion?
I think it goes to just what you said. It's people holding longer, trying to get back some equity, if they have any at all. And the scary part is, if you have those pressures of the interest rates starting to rise, the money supply getting squeezed, and then all of a sudden you have a flood of inventory, then you've got a perfect storm for another, another market crash.
Ooh, and on that note, we will invite, we will welcome the next caller. Caller, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent. Who am I speaking with?
This is Tanaya, Mike Wavy, Mama.
Well, how do you do?
I'm doing fine.
Do you have a question for the councilman?
Yes, Zach and them, I love y'all, what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. God's be and keep in contact.
Hey, thank you very much.
And what's going on in the world today is messed up. We all got the same blood, no matter what color we are.
I agree with you 100%. We just got to do a little better tomorrow than we did today and do that every day, and I think we'll be in a good place.
Yes, God's be.
Thank you so much.
Love y'all.
Love you too.
Good to have the support of the constituents out there. One of the things that it gravely concerns people out there, speaking of crashes, is the prospect that we could face another one sometime down the road. You and I have lived through two. You and I graduated college right into a nice recession, which was punctuated by the three-headed monster of the savings and loan crisis, the Wall Street crash, and a deep recession that faced Bush in his first term, in his only term. We grow up, we get married, we have kids, we get our feet beneath us, we buy homes, and then there's another enormous crash, even worse than the one in the late 80s and early 90s. Again, the same three-headed monster, a Wall Street crash, a housing crash, and a banking crisis. This time it's not the savings and loans, but it's the subprime lenders. We've been talking so much about local stuff, but, putting on your "you're the king of the world" hat for the day, what would you do to make sure that we can keep stability and not have another crash?
I think it all goes to reasonability. I mean, amongst the subprime lenders, you had the government forcing banks to lend in areas they really shouldn't have. There were people that, knowingly couldn't afford what they were buying, but they allowed it, and they actually, in some areas, encouraged it. So, there's a lot of times where we need to not have the regulation or the influence of government. We have enough of it, and we have enough for protection, but we need to allow markets to do what markets do. Markets go up, markets go down, and they correct on their own with minimal interference. For years, as we grew up, we saw the money supply get tightened, we saw it get loosened, and it worked, and it was effective until we hit other issues where tightening the money supply or not really wasn't the problem. It was, bad loans and so forth, and and then they tried to blame appraisers and said, "Well, we got to regulate appraisers." Well, no, that was a symptom.
That was
baloney. Wasn't the problem.
That was absolute baloney. Yeah. Appraisers were as much to blame for the housing crash, in my opinion, and I was right there, as earthworms are to blame for mercury in fish. Okay, they are involved in fishing, but they are no way responsible for the mercury in the seas. And yes, I just made that up off the seat of my pants.
That was good.
Hold on, I'm writing it down.
Write that down, and you can use it royalty-free, Rich. Okay, so you touched on one thing, and that is under President Carter, a law was passed where banks had to make affordable loans to low-income borrowers.
Right.
And we'll go back to that unfunded mandate idea.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a Bank of America and you say, "Look, you're a gajillion-dollar enterprise. You need to loan more to folks for affordable housing who have low incomes," they can absorb whatever comes with that with that terrain. Mm-hmm. But when you go to the small community bank and you put the same mandate on them, and some of the loans go south because that's what happens, now they are going to start to fail because they have loans that can't get repaid all too often. Okay, and shame on me for not remembering the law, but it's a watershed law. It's still in effect, and the only thing that has changed the law is the threshold of the size of the institution that has that mandate. And I think the threshold has been too low all too often. You know, you can't go to a small community bank and put the same mandates on them that you put on a large financial, global, multinational institution. The other thing you mentioned, which I think is important, is the government sensibly regulating things while at the same time allowing market forces to affect, to occur. Okay? So I'm going to play devil's advocate mm-hmm. with you. Okay. I would say there's 50% of the country is considers themselves liberal, 50% of the country considers themselves conservative. Conservative folks would probably be more for a free market type thing, unleash the power of capitalism, and I'm a capitalist, I believe that as well. But I also have seen that sometimes the government almost has to act like more of a referee to make sure that the unfettered, you know, runaway train capitalism doesn't cause the kind of things like the Great Depression in 1929, where there was almost no regulation. Can you speak to that? Is there a happy medium?
My opinion.
Yeah.
So government is there to make sure that people play fairly within the system. But a lot of times what they'll do is they'll enact laws or legislation or regulation which really guides the market or picks winners and losers. And that's not what government's there to do. When you look at, I think it was Community Redevelopment Act.
That's it, yeah. Yes. Community Reinvestment Act.
Right, Reinvestment Act. So in that respect, you know, those banks, they were forced to loan in certain areas, but originally they were doing it with proper qualifications. They just were in areas that they traditionally didn't loan in, because they were at-risk areas. And they said, no, you're going to go into those areas and you're going to loan, because there's a lot of people that live there that can't afford it.
Rightfully
where they're
so.
At. Yeah. So they said, we want you to go into there and not redline those districts and open them up to the free market. Allow those people access to the capital to buy their homes. And then they went a little bit further. And they started asking banks to loan at 100 or 100%+. And then, there's good greed and there's bad greed. And good greed is what, you know, keeps a prosperous free market. But bad greed is when, you know, people just are taking advantage of certain laws and they start to overstep the bounds and they start to, you know, packaging mortgages that had no collateral to them. And that's where we had our big crash.
Good greed and bad greed. We're up against a break. We'll come back to that because I have a thought on it. And we'll be right back.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repair man, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO Pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000
$1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138. Or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
It's time for the revolution, the real estate solution. We sort of that confusion. Come join the revolution.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Revolution. I am J. Philip Ferranda, subbing for Victoria Rivadeneira here at AM 1700 WRCR. And we're having a very enlightening conversation with Councilman John C. Noto of the town of Clarkstown. We just spoke about greed and good greed and bad greed in terms of, you know, capitalism and all of that. And it reminded me of a YouTube clip we both saw where Milton Friedman, the great economist, talked about greed, yes. It's only greed when it's the other guy. You're never the greedy guy, and I just love that. So I'm told we have Vinny on the line. Are you there, Vinny?
Hey, gang. How you doing?
Vinny, we're doing great, and I'm sorry to make you wait so long. I know you called earlier, but we got a pretty interesting guy on the show tonight, don't we?
I think the congressman is councilman is doing a great job, and you are all doing a great job. Jay Phillip, you're having a great show tonight. Nothing for me to add because you're doing such a great job.
Okay, well, I will greedily take that compliment, and we'll go back to you, Rich.
Thank you, Betty.
Community Reinvestment Act that we talked about, which I couldn't remember, but the councilman brought in the great save on that. Do you have any deals there in your neck of the woods in the Harrisburg area where you're dealing with community reinvestment loans?
Yeah, and you know, it's the same. It boils down to the same thing that you guys just led to, which is this. You know, pure capitalism only assumes everyone has the same education and everyone has the same moral code. And it's the same concept with the Community Reinvestment Act. How it's actually implied and done and et cetera, and to what level is all about the people actually doing it and their interpretation of it. And it gets messed up because people have different opinions of moral code and it's a tension.
Yeah, very true.
Well said.
Very true. Okay. So we talked about the rates, we talked about the inventory, we talked about crashes. What are some of the things, and I guess this is sort of off script, but you know, one of the things that's affecting our local market here is the real lack of affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Over in Westchester County, we consider co-ops to be like the starter home of Westchester County. Real estate is a little less expensive in Rockland County, but is there anything that can be done using the market or using the power of government, authority of government, to have more affordable housing in our area?
Yeah, this is one of the big initiatives that we're trying to do. And, you know, it's not just us, it's others throughout our whole region, because the biggest deficit we have is that affordability, because mm-hmm. we're in such a, you know, expensive real estate market. There's certain zoning laws that allow, that, you know, force a developer to, you know, 10% or 20% of a development to allocate to towards affordable, and then it's the interpretation of what exactly is affordable. But what senior housing is probably the biggest deficit is people that want to downsize from their homes and so forth, and
I agree,
and go somewhere where they can afford and still stay near their family and where they live their whole life. So, you know, we're trying to find land to do, you know, private-public partnerships with and so forth. And it's difficult because the land is so expensive, and a developer has a lot of risk when he goes into a development and so forth. But it's something that we continue to look for and, you know, try to, you know, hopefully there's developers out there that'll, you know, that'll drive that segment of the market. But, again, with land costs as high as they are, you know, it's very difficult.
Well, I got to tell you, I think when it and senior housing truly is one of the big concerns with an aging population. Mm-hmm. Baby boomers are you know, the second largest segment of our population in this country. So many people with the nest being empty, with entering the phase of life where they're on a fixed income, you know, they're faced with, do I move to the Carolinas? Do I move to the Poconos? Or do I want to be near my grandchildren? What can I do? Do I have to keep working? How can I live here? We don't need to clear cut an entire subdivision for senior housing, thankfully. Mm-hmm. You can go vertical. You can go, there's options. You can build townhome communities. I do believe that there is something in it for developers to do that. I'd be open to more ideas from our listeners, but I have to say that that is truly a question we have to live in going forward, because that demand is not going to go down.
No, it's a very tough balance to strike, and you know, we're going to keep looking for it. We have to.
That demand is not going to go down. A couple other things. So we talked about affordable housing. Diversity is also a big thing. Not too long ago, across the river in Westchester County, there was a $50 million settlement with the County of Westchester and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Basically, the Department of Housing and Urban Development said, hey, you took $50 million over the years of HUD money for certain housing initiatives, but you didn't spend it the way we wanted to. So now we want you to build affordable housing to promote diversity in X, Y, and Z communities. Okay? There was an ongoing battle. The subsequent administration, Rob Astorino, who succeeded Spano as county executive, was left with that fight. It is the argument came up that, hey, HUD is trying to artificially manipulate society. They're trying to artificially manipulate the communities. The answer on the other side of that was, hold on, wait a minute. When you have zoning that only allows one-acre McMansion, isn't that also trying to artificially manipulate zoning? Where's the happy medium? You know, where you sit in a no-win seat like a town councilman, how do you split that baby? What do you do?
You know, when you look at your zoning code, and we have a very strong zoning code, and I can only speak for the town of Clarkstown, and
that's what you paid to do.
Yeah, exactly right. And we our goal, and we have a fairly diverse population, not as diverse as we'd like to see it, but you know, that's the market moving, and it is moving, and we're seeing, you know, just the diverse population is growing, and you know, with the zoning code, all you want to do is maintain the character of the community so that whoever is moving into it is going to move into the same community that we fell in love with that brought us here as well. You know, the affordability, that's personal property rights. If somebody's house is worth X, then they should get X and follow the market. And you know, manipulating an area to bring in certain you know, certain aspects of the market, that's just not really the place of government, I don't think. I think the market will drive a diverse population. Our fair housing laws are very strong and allow anybody to go anywhere, and that's the way it should be.
I think thanks to fair housing laws that the market will make the proper corrections. Looks like we are up against the end of our show, which flew by. If one of your constituents or someone wants to get in touch with you, Councilman, I have here the email address, jnoto@clarkstown.org. Is that the best way to contact you?
That's the best way to get to me.
Great. Once again, I am J. Philip Ferranda. Best way to reach me is jphillip@jphillip.com. That's an easy one for a guy like me to remember. We want to thank you for joining us here on the Real Estate Revolution. We will be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. to discuss housing, the real estate market, and where we are going in this community and in our area. I want to thank you, Councilman, for coming in. This has been a really enlightening conversation, and it is my hope we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thanks, folks, and we will see you bright and bushy-tailed next week.
Thanks for joining in the revolution. Now you have the real estate solution. Every Wednesday night at 6, it's a program you should pick. Join us for the revolution.
Thanks for joining the Real Estate Revolution with your host, Victoria Rivadeneira. It's a revolution.
We're live from New York every Wednesday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. for everything real estate, right here on WRCR AM 1700 on air and simulcast on the web at WRCR.com. And we're streaming live on Periscope, Facebook, Meerkat, and YouTube. So come back every week for the Real Estate Revolution.
AM 1700 WRCR. AM 1700 WRCR HD, Ramapo.